Our speaker really does not need any introduction. She's an active practitioner from Bangor, Ireland. She began her practice in Belfast and lived there for many years, and that speaks volumes. Her experience in showing forth divine love's presence and power commends her strongly to our attention. Please welcome Mrs. Myrtle Smith, whose talk is titled, The Greatest of These is Love. Mrs. Smith. Can you hear? Sorry, I forgot to switch to the... I don't think I need to come and speak to you about love. You know all about it. I feel that love. The love I have felt in California has been absolutely overwhelming. And I thank you all very much for it. Thank you for inviting me here to just share some of my thoughts on love with you. Some weeks before I left home, the chairman of this committee called me. She said, Myrtle, could we please have a title for your talk? Because we want to print our invitation. And I said, I don't have a title. I don't even have a talk. And she said, well, we need to go to print pretty soon. Could you think of something? So I was standing there desperately trying to think, and I thought, the greatest of these is love. Because I was thinking, what can I talk about? What can I address? Can I address loneliness? Can I address battered wives, child abuse, unemployment, lack, divisions in our movement? Will I address any of these things? And I thought, no, if I speak about love, God's love, that addresses everything. But I was a bit frightened when I came off the phone and thought, I don't know enough about this subject. How can I possibly speak to people about that? But I was forced to remember many, many things in my own life and many, many times when divine love had met my need and the need of so many others. And that's simply what I want to share with you today. Now, can everyone hear me? Can everyone in the Sunday school hear me? Good. I'm sorry you can't see me. Well, at least I'm sorry I can't see you. That sounds better, doesn't it? Well, I usually get you all warmed up by telling you a joke, and I only know one this time. And this is a story of a woman who wasn't feeling very well, and she went to see her doctor. The doctor said, well, tell me your symptoms. Do you have headaches? She said, yes. He said, is your back sore? She said, yes. He said, can you sleep at night? She said, not very well. He said, well, tell me, do you wake up grumpy in the morning? She says, no, I let him wake up all by himself. I wonder why the girls are laughing harder than the men. All right. As you know, the title from my talk is from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. So I'd like to start off by reading that chapter. You know, no matter what your need is today, and I bet you've all got needs of some sort, and you think that your need is maybe for healing or money or a new relationship or a new home, a new place to live, your only need is to know that you are loved, that you are loved of God, that you are the loved of love. When you know that and accept it and believe it, that meets your every need. That's what Mrs. Eddy meant when she said, divine love always has met and always will meet every human need. So your only need is to know that. To know that there's no one more important to God than you and that not one of us is any better or any more important to God than you are. That's your only need. I think this chapter is so wonderful because a man who actually murdered Christians wrote this chapter after the love of God for him had touched him, when he saw a light on the way to Damascus, and God touched him and told him that he had better things in store for him and better work for him to do. That changed that man's life so dramatically that he was able to write one of the most wonderful chapters in the Bible. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, and have not charity, I am become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy, and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long, and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, speaketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth. But whether they be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether they be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known. And now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three, but the greatest of these is charity. Paul said charity was greater than faith and hope, that love is greater than faith and hope. And so it is. Love is the greatest power in the universe. And if we put it into operation, it's always there, but we need to put it into operation for it to become active. Just like there's always water there, but until we turn on the tap, we can't get the water. We can't get the supply. So we have to put this love into action. I was brought up in a very religious family. I was brought up in a Presbyterian church, and I had a good foundation in the Bible. Sunday schools and Chris myself would say, God must have sent it for a purpose. And I used to say, I don't believe that. What sort of a God could possibly make his child sick? Could he make his child ill in order to make him good? Why could he not make him good in the first place? So I had all these questions all my life, and when I was a young woman and things were not very happy in my own life, someone gave me 2 copies of the Christian Science Sentinel. And I read those over and over and over again every night in bed, and I loved them and promised myself that someday I would get the Christian Science textbook. And then my mother became critically ill. And my mother was what we would call a Condiac, that she believed that she had every disease and every illness under the sun. And she read all these medical journals. And she was always taking tablets and pills. And if she met someone else who went to a new doctor and got new pills, my mother had to get them too. And she ate so many of these that she would go about like a zombie. She would walk into walls. She would fall down. If she went out alone, she was usually brought home in an ambulance or by the police or something. This had gone on for years. And her own family doctor told her he couldn't possibly give her any more medication. So she went to other doctors. And my father had died, and I knew that my mother was lonely. But she and I never got on very well together. And I think it was partly because I questioned God and religion and everything. But one day I was at home alone with my mother when she went completely out of her mind. I was able to get out of the house for a while, and I had to go and call her doctor. And she was taken to the hospital in a straitjacket. In a matter of hours, her hair turned snow white and very, very gray. At that time, she was only age 57. And the doctor said that she was so full of bromide that she would only live about 3 days. But if by some miracle she should live, she would have to spend the rest of her life in this mental institution. When we got that verdict, my family and neighbors and friends and my mother's church friends, everybody said, well, she wouldn't listen. She wouldn't listen to the advice of her doctors. But I remember thinking, I don't care what she has done. She couldn't help herself, and she doesn't deserve to die like this. She has a right to dignity. The next morning, I went to the Christian Science Church for the first time, and I asked someone how I could get in touch with a practitioner, and she gave me a Christian Science Journal. Now, we didn't have a telephone then, so on the way home, I stopped at a telephone kiosk to call this practitioner. The first one wasn't at home, and I called the next one. And I told her this whole story about my mother and how she only had 3 days to live. And this voice at the other end of the phone said, that's all right, dear. I'll be thinking about you. Call me tomorrow. Well, I came off the phone and said, this lot are nuts. I just told her that my mother's dying, and she's not even going to a hospital to see her. I thought she should run up and lay hands on her or something. So anyhow, that night, we were called out to the hospital. The doctor said they didn't think she would live through the night. And I had a small child at that time, so I couldn't leave the house. My two brothers and sisters went, and they sat all night at the hospital and came back in the morning. They said, well, she lasted through the night, but the doctors say it'll just be a matter of hours. So I decided to go up and see her in the morning. And on the way, I called the practitioner again. I told her what was happening, and she said, that's all right, dear. I'm thinking about you. Well, she said, in the meantime, will you please sing praises to God? So I sat on the bus. It was quite a bus journey. And I sat at the back of the bus, and in as low a voice as I could, I sang all the old hymns that I could think of. And when I got to the hospital, I was feeling a lot better. And I went to this little private ward that my mother had been in, and she wasn't there. And the nurse came out and said, are you looking for your mother? She's been moved to this big ward in the hospital. Do you call them a ward here? Yeah. So she told me to go and look for her. And I went up one side of this hospital ward and then right up the other, and I couldn't see my mother anywhere. And then I heard her calling me. And I went to the place where the voice came from. And when I got to the end of her bed, I was terrified. because my mother had not only gone back to what she was like, but she'd gone back to what she was like when I was a little girl. Her hair had turned back to auburn. Her complexion was like peaches and cream. And she was sitting there and she said, "What am I doing here? Isn't this a mental hospital?" She said, "There's nothing wrong with me." And when I went, the nurse came and she said, "The doctor would like to see you." So I went out to see that there were two doctors. And they said, "Have you seen your mother?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "Well, we can't believe it. It's some sort of a freak healing." And I said, "Oh, it's not a freak healing." I said, "I have been to a Christian Science practitioner, and that's what healed my mother." He said, "You don't believe in that rubbish, do you?" He said, "You know, we never gave your mother any medication, and we can't understand this healing. But," he said, "there must be a scientific answer to it, and we are going to keep her here." He said, "We are going to study her because she could go that way again and she could be quite dangerous." He said, "Have you any idea how much bromide is inside that woman?" So I came out, and on the way home I called my practitioner friend again and I told her what they said, and she said, "My dear, they couldn't keep Peter and John in prison. They can't keep your mother in there. That's not her place. You go home and sing some more hymns." So I went home and sang some more hymns, and I told my family this good news, and they didn't believe it, and they all went up to the hospital, and they all agreed with the doctors that she should stay there because they couldn't understand it at all. And all the churches around were saying they had been praying for her, and it was a result of their prayers. But I knew that it wasn't. And the next day, when I went to see my mother, I went into the little lodge where the office was, and I said I would like to take my mother home, but I'm the youngest in the family, and the rest of the family won't get their consent. And the person in attendance there said, "If your mother lives with you, dear, she's your responsibility. Just sign this form, and you can take her home today." And I went and brought my mother home, and it was a lovely summer day, and we went out in a bus. Now, before that, my mother had been very inward-looking and always talking about her ailments and herself and her problems, and she could talk about nothing else. But that day in the bus, she was looking out at nature, and she was saying, "Oh, look at the sheep and cows and the trees. It's all so beautiful." And she said, "You know, I really feel as if God loves me and cares for me." And when we got off the bus in the city centre, there was a coffee shop that used to be in Belfast, and they made pancakes, and the smell of coffee coming from it was lovely. It was my mother's favourite spot, and she said, "Can we go for coffee?" And we sat there. It was such a wonderful feeling to be there. And when I went to the practitioner's home to thank her, she was a very humble woman, and she said, "My dear, your mother was almost healed when you came to me." And I said, "How do you make that out?" She said, "Because you kept saying to me, 'I don't care what she has done. She doesn't deserve to die like this.'" And she said, "You kept saying to me that you knew that God was a God of love and could not inflict this upon his child." She said, "It was the love that you felt for your mother that reached out and healed." And it was such a wonderful healing. But after that, I took up the study of Christian Science, and my family didn't approve of it. They thought it was everybody's prayers that healed my mother, and they never would have anything to do with Christian Science at all. But I knew what had healed her. So I quickly began to prove it and demonstrate it in my own life. And then when I went into the practice, I had already learned the power of love. Before I had my name in the journal, I had healings, as I know most of you know, with people who were in jail. Some people for murder had had wonderful healings. And I knew that it was love, the power of love, and the tenderness of this love that had healed, that it was nothing to do with me. So I knew that I had to love, that only love could heal. And I used to read that little book, The Greatest Thing in the World, about 3 times a week. And I read this chapter, 1 Corinthians, daily. And I prayed that I could be more loving and learn how to love. And then I went to live in Singapore. My husband was in the Royal Marines. And we went to Singapore to live. And sorry, that's before I went into the practice. And I think I should tell you this story first, because this was the power of love at work too. We were living in Singapore, and there was a woman from England who was first reader in the church there. She was a great Christian Scientist, and I admired her an awful lot. And she used to invite me to her home to talk to me about Christian Science. But there was one problem that boiled these days. I went maybe 2 times a week to her house. And the problem was that she had dogs. And all my life, I had been terrified of dogs. Since I was a child, if a dog came one side of the road, I moved to the other side of the road. Or I wouldn't go to visit in anyone's house that had a dog. I was absolutely terrified of them. And after I married my first child, always wanted a dog, and I told him, no, we can't have a dog. I was still so frightened. So when I went to visit my friend, her dog had just had pups, I think 6 or 7 pups. And she had about 3 dogs, and these dogs were just running in and out all the time. And she knew that I was nervous. They were jumping up in my knee, and she would put them out, but she had those sort of swing doors that there's a gap underneath, and the dogs always came in. So one day, I had decided that I'm going to stop these visits because I was too uncomfortable. I was sitting on the edge of my seat, gripping the seat. And this day she said to me, when are you going to heal that problem? And I said, what problem? She said, the dog problem. She said, your mother had such a wonderful healing, and you've had so many proofs that surely you know how to heal this. Well, I remember leaving her house and feeling very hurt and thinking that she didn't understand this fear, how great this fear was. But that night in bed, I began to think that she was right, that if I believed that God was love and that God made everyone and everything, then surely God made dogs. And God loved dogs, so those dogs could not harm me, and I could not harm them. Now, I began to open my thought to thinking this way, but I was still thinking, I'm not going to her house next week, and I don't want a dog. Well, the very next morning, I had been invited to have coffee with someone who lived at the bottom of our hill. We lived at the top of the hill. And I was going out through my gate when there was a large black dog lying outside my gate. He looked very neglected. He had sores in his coat. You could tell he hadn't been fed properly. And so I sort of walked very cautiously round him. And he followed me to this house at the bottom of the road. And I went in to have my coffee. I was there for 2 hours, and when I came out, this dog was still there. And he followed me back up the road. He didn't bark, he didn't try to jump, he didn't do anything. And all this time I was trying to know the truth about God's ideas, and that he was God's idea too. So when I got back to the house, I said to the maid — if you were in the Army or Marines, you could have a maid — could she please go and feed that dog and give it a drink, but she was not allowed to have it inside the gate. So she went out, she fed the dog and gave it some water, and it still lay there. And my son came home from school very excited and said, Mom, this must be one of the stray dogs. There were so many stray dogs in this country. He said, please, can we take it home? Can we bring it into the house? And I said, no, if you want to play with it outside the gate and feed it, but it's not coming in here. Well, for about 3 weeks, everywhere I went, this dog went. And it didn't follow anybody else. It didn't follow my son or my friends or aunt, just me. So I used to go into town to do shopping, and the dog would follow me to the bus, and I would come back maybe 6 hours later, and that dog was still at the bus stop. And it came right all the way back up with me. So I began to speak to it. And I asked my maid, what would we call the dog? And she said she thought Fan was a nice name for a dog. Now, Fan in the glossary means separator of fact from fable. So I thought, well, I have to separate the fact from the fable. And this deer is a fable because God made this dog. Well, I began to be more friendly with it, but one night it was the monsoon season and there was a great lightning storm, lightning and thunder and torrential rain, and I was in bed and I got wakened up with this. And my first thought was that I hadn't seen the dog all day. And then I began to think, well, maybe he found his home or he's got another home. But the storm got worse and worse. And finally, I was in tears. And I said, Father, please forgive me for thinking I couldn't love something that you made. I love that dog. Please bring him home. And I was praying like that when I heard a whimper outside the gate. And I ran out in my nightdress in the rain, and I brought him in, and he was soaking wet, and we lay on my floor. And he put his paws round my neck and he kissed me and I hugged him. And I was saying to him, I do love you, do love you, do love you. And my little boy woke up and came in to see what the commotion was. And he couldn't believe that here was a dog in our house. And he followed me into our bedroom and he slept at the foot of my bed. He never ever tried to jump up on me or anything. He just followed me. Well, soon it was time for us to be thinking about leaving Singapore, and you were not allowed to bring pets with you. And I thought, what is going to happen to this dog? Because there were so many stray dogs in Singapore that no one wanted to take them in. And then I thought, God used that dog for a purpose. He used that dog to show me his tenderness, his tender, loving care. He didn't say, you're a big grown woman, get a grip on yourself. He sent this lovely, gentle dog. So he used that dog for his purpose. So I knew that if he loved me that much, and he could teach me that lesson so gently and lovingly and tenderly, that he loved that dog, and that he had another mission for that dog to fulfill. Well, a few days after that, I heard an awful commotion outside the gate, and there were two Indian men out there. And I called the maid, and I said, could you translate what's happening out there? And she went out, and she came back, and the dog was jumping up on the man. It was kissing him, it was licking him. She said, oh, Missy, this man said he lost his dog 2 years ago. And since that time, he has looked for him, and this is his dog. Now, I knew that man was telling me the truth, because I saw the love and the tears were running down his cheeks, and the dog's love for him. And I said, yes, he can go. I know that that's his owner, and he can go. And I watched them walking down the hill, and Sam was wagging his tail, and he never even looked back. And for a minute, I felt a bit sad. And then I thought, no, Sam, mission accomplished. You came to fulfill a mission in the most gentle, loving way. That taught me a lot about God's love and his tenderness. Tenderness, you know, Mrs. Eddy says, tenderness accompanies all the might of spirit. There's more power in tenderness than there is in anger. And sometimes when we're wanting to be angry or feel that our anger is justified, if we can just put that tenderness in its place, we'll see wonderful results. I remember one time I had heard stories about a very prominent Christian scientist, and she had done some terrible things and hurt and offended an awful lot of people, and those hurts had lasted for a long time. And I was feeling very angry about this, and it was coming between me and my practice. I found that although I was saying all the words and I knew all the truth, I was not getting results. People were not getting healed. And I knew it was this resentment that was in my thoughts. And I thought at the time that I wanted to write to the board of directors in Boston, and I wanted to tell them about this person. But one night, I'd had a call, a long-distance call from someone who was having a real bad time physically. It was quite a dangerous situation that she was in. And I knew that I really had to pray. And I remember thinking, Father, don't change the world. Change me. I need to be changed. Please take all the hard, stony thoughts out of my thinking and let me feel love again, because if I don't feel love, I can't heal. If you're not loving, you're not living. And that's the truth. So I sat and thought that way for a while, and then the thought came to me, remember the golden rule. As ye would that men should do to you, do ye also unto them. And I thought, if I were in that person's shoes, and I had done such unkind things, what would I like someone to do for me? And the thought came, forgive her. And I thought, I can do that easily. I do forgive this person, because she was only being used. She was not the originator of this fault. She was being used. She was a victim of it. And I really felt such love for her that I could actually sit for half an hour and pray for that person. And I was beginning to feel much better, and this person that had called me long distance called again, and this time the response was a lot better. And after a few more phone calls, that person had a wonderful healing. But I went to bed after that, and my son, who, as you know, is a member of the Peace People in Northern Ireland, was only about 16 at that time. And he and a young friend were going out into a very dangerous area to put some leaflets through doors. And I had asked him not to go to that area because I didn't think it was wise, but he felt that he should. So I had been praying to support him. But when I got into bed, suddenly the phone went, and I answered it, and they said, this is the Royal Victoria Hospital. Your son is in this hospital. He's been involved in a very serious car accident. So I had to get a taxi and go to the hospital. The doctor met me and he said, how these boys are alive, I don't know. Their car skidded in the road. Some people were stoning them and they were trying to get out of this area. Their car skidded on the wet road and turned right over, and the car is a write-off. Your son is all right. He's just in shock. And the other boy only had his glasses broken. I was so very, very grateful for that. But on the way home, I said to this boy he could come and stay at our house that night because he was still in a bit of shock. And his mother was an invalid and she'd been in hospital for 8 years. And she was being allowed home for 1 week. And the father had the whole house redecorated for her coming home and had bought a brand new car. And that was the car that he loaned to those two boys to go out in, and he was to go and fetch his wife the next day, hopefully in this car. Because they were underage, the car was not insured. And this looked so terrible, and this boy was so upset that I just knew that the forgiveness and the love and the praying that I had to do this that evening embraced that boy. It embraced his father, it embraced his mother, it embraced everything. And a divine love would compensate in this case. The next morning I went with the boy to meet his father and tell him what had happened. But his father, I'm grateful to say, embraced the boy and said, "The main thing is that you weren't hurt. You're alive, and that's more important than the car." This car was brand new, and this man had had to order it. And he rang the car company that he ordered it from to tell them what had happened to the car. Within 1 hour, that company sent that man a brand new car for free, for nothing. Do you see the power of love that was at work that night? Look how it changed me. Look how it healed that situation between this person and me. Look how it helped my patients and how it protected my son. Well, through that experience, I learned that the only way to protect ourselves from mental malpractice is through the Christ. It's through loving the other person or people, through forgiving them, loving them, understanding them, and remembering the golden rule, "As ye would that men should do to you, do to them." In the early days of my practice, I did this a lot. And I'm sorry to say that as I went on in the practice and got more advanced, I didn't read this chapter on love so often or do this work. I began to think I knew it all. But we never know it all. And love is the purpose for our church. That's the first thing I loved about Christian Science, was that it taught that God is love. I had believed that all my life, and when I first read the Christian Science textbook and read that that's what it taught, that God is love, I knew that that was the church for me. And love is the greatest power there is. Now, no one ever loved like our Master, Christ Jesus. No one in this world, because he died for all when he didn't have to. He went through all sorts of persecutions just to prove to us that there is no death and that God is love. When he saw people who were sick, he never said, "Wait until you die and go to heaven." And he never said, "Go to a doctor." He healed them. He healed every problem that came across his path. And finally, he overcame death for other people and at last for himself. And I was thinking about this last night in bed, and I was thinking about the love that Jesus had, even humanly, for his disciples. How he would make them a meal, prepare that meal. How he cared for their needs, to see the needs of the multitudes. He knew it wasn't enough just to give them the word and the truth. They had a long walk home and all that heat. And he knew it was that he had to feed them and show them in a way that they could understand right where they are that God is love. And even when he was being crucified, his thoughts were with everyone else and not himself. And I particularly loved this little bit. It said, "Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister Mary, the wife of Cleopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother And a disciple standing by whom he loved, he saith unto his mother, Woman, behold thy son. Then saith he to the disciple, Behold thy mother. And from that hour, that disciple took her unto his own home. That was one of his last acts. He didn't say, put my mother in a home and forget about it. He said to the disciple that he loved most, take care of my mother. And how much love that disciple must have had for his master when he took that woman to his own home and cared for her. How awful it must have been for her who had given birth to this wonderful child to have to stand there and see him crucified. And yet his last thoughts were for his disciples and finally for his mother. That says a lot about him. And if we want to be his disciples and follow him, we have to learn to do these healing works. But first of all, we have to become like him. We have to become loving. We have to become Christ-like. And that's what Mary Baker Eddy endeavored to do in her life. She followed him so closely in her life that the more you read about this wonderful woman, the more you realize how much she loved him. If people say about our church that we don't believe in Jesus or we put Mrs. Eddy before Jesus, that is such a lie. Such a lie. You've only to read the chapter on atonement and Eucharist to find out how Mrs. Eddy loved the Master. This is from a book called 12 Years with Mary Baker Eddy by Irving Thomason. And he says, he was talking about her teaching his class. He went through class with Mrs. Eddy. And he said, the first day's teaching on the subject of love, she concluded somewhat as follows. Love is the father who is strong in his care for his children and provides for every need. Every one of his dear ones. Love is a mother tenderly brooding over all her children. This mother guards each one from harm, nourishes, holds close to herself, and carefully leads along the upward way. Love is a shepherd who goes forth into the darkness of night, into the storm and wind, to find the lost sheep. This shepherd of love leaves the beaten path, searches the wood and marsh, pushes aside the brambles and seeks until the lost is found. Then he places it within his bosom and returns to heal and restore. What is the best way to bring about an instantaneous healing? She asked. There were many answers, but when they had finished, she said that it is to love, to be loved, and to live love. There is nothing but love. Love is the secret of all healing. The love which forgets self and dwells in the secret place in the realm of the real. But it is not mere human love that heals, she pointed out. Not a love for a person nor for anything. It is love itself. The realization of this love for a moment will heal the sick or raise the dead. And there's a footnote here. It says, Miss Clara Barton, celebrated philanthropist and first president of the American Red Cross Society, although not a Christian Scientist, said of Mrs. Eddy in an interview appearing in the New York American of January the 6th, 1908. Love permeates
all the teaching of this great woman. So great, I believe, that at this perspective, we can scarcely realize how great. And I believe that very much. Last time I was on lecture tour, I had quite a few opportunities to see the tenderness of God's love at work for me, in his care for me and mine. I was lecturing one night, and I had had to take 4 different flights that day. I was in 4 different time zones, 4 different climates, and when I arrived at the hotel, it's 5 p.m., and I was told that someone was coming to collect me at 6 p.m., so I didn't even have time to eat. And I had a shower and started to get dressed for the lecture, and I had a little free time before this person called for me, and I decided to call home. And I called my 2 daughters who were sharing an apartment together. Now, it must have been almost midnight at home. And when one of my daughters answered the phone, she was crying. And she said, "Oh, Mummy, I am so glad that you have called." She said, "Tracy is very ill." She said, "I had to get a doctor today." I said, "Why on earth did you get a doctor? Tracy's never been to a doctor in her life." She said, "Well, Mummy, we didn't think it was right to disturb you. Because you were on lecture tour, we weren't quite sure where you were." And she said, "Tracy said that because she hasn't been living the life of a Christian scientist, that she didn't even think she had the right to ask. So," she said, "I had to call in a doctor. And the doctor said that she had pleurisy and that her temperature was so high that he was going to make a few calls, other calls that he had to make. He was coming right back, and if her temperature hadn't gone down, she had to go straight into the hospital. And he said, she is very ill and you should try to contact your mother." So I asked her, could she get Tracy to come to the phone, and she said she couldn't, but she would bring the phone as close to her as she could. So she brought the phone, and I could hear Tracy's breathing was very labored and that she was crying. So I began to tell her that God loved her and that everything that she needed was right there. And then she said, "Mommy, please pray for me. I'm frightened." And I put down that phone and I was in tears. And I thought, "Myrtle, you're a good kid telling her God's right there, meeting her need. What are you doing here? You should be at home with your family that need you. You don't need all this hassle." And I could see that I was getting myself very upset and that that wouldn't do my lecture any good. So I prayed to be calm. And then I remembered a story that I heard another Christian scientist give once when I was in Boston. He said that he was the COP for a very large area. And one day he had a special meeting to attend. It was a very important meeting. And his little boy, about 5, was very ill. His wife was also a Christian Science practitioner, and they had both been really working about this problem. But the situation got worse. And he was about to go into the meeting when his wife called, and she said, "I think you better come home, because this looks very serious to me." He said, "Well, I'll pray about it." And he said he came in and he sat down at his desk and he prayed sincerely that God would give him an answer and show him what to do. And he opened his Bible at the book of Ruth and he read these words, "There is a kinsman nearer than I." And he thought that those words were so wonderful. "There is a kinsman nearer than I." Then he thought, why, that's the truth. God is the true father and mother of that child. He is his only kinsman. and he is nearer than I could ever be. And I'm going to trust that child to his care, and I'm going to go about my father's business. And he went into this meeting and came out, got in his car, and drove home. And as he got to his own house, the little boy and his wife ran down the driveway to meet him. That story had impressed me so much because of the beauty in those words, and I saw this as an opportunity to just put that into operation in my own experience. So I began to know that there was indeed a kinsman nearer than I. He was nearer than her breath, closer than I could ever be. And he was right there, and I was going to trust him to take care of them both. So I went out and gave my lecture, and every truth in that lecture I applied to that situation at home. And when I came home, I called my daughters again, even though it was the middle of the night there, and the daughter who had been ill answered the phone, and she shouted, "Mommy, Mommy, I'm healed." I was completely healed half an hour after I spoke to you on the phone. And she said, the doctor came back and I opened the door for him and he said, "How is your sister now, dear?" Wasn't that a lovely proof of God's tender love, caring for me and mine? I tell you, it did something for my lectures because it helped me to see that I had proved once again what I was saying. So another time I was in England, and I hadn't been feeling good. And I had to travel from the north of England to the south of England. And a friend was driving me by car. It was a very hot day. We're not used to heat waves. And we had a heat wave on that day. And I had my purse with me. And in the purse, I had about $800. And I needed that money to pay for the hotel for my friend and I. And we stopped at a service place to have a cold drink. It was a bank holiday, and this place was crowded with people. And my friend said to me, "You sit on the grass, and I'll go and get the drink and bring it out." So I sat on the grass, and she brought out the drink. And we got up, got into the car, and I had left my purse on the grass with all this money in it. Now, we had to be at a certain place at a practitioner's home by 5 o'clock, and it looked like we were not going to make it. And I was getting quite disturbed about this, because she had a group of, I had to ask my heart again, and I got out and was being sick. And I said, what on earth am I going to do? How am I going to get there in time? And this thought from the lesson sermon that week came to my thoughts. It said, "It is I, be not afraid." And I thought, I'm just going to accept that. It is I, even in this situation where I seem to be not feeling well and had to get to a certain place for a certain time, I'm going to say, "It is I, be not afraid." He is in complete control of my life and my lecturing and everything connected with it. And he's complete control of my friend's home and whatever's going on there. So I lay on the grass for a while. I had a little sleep and I felt better, and we got up and we drove to our destination. But we had just missed these young people. They had to go before we came. But because I wasn't feeling good and looking good, in a way I was glad. I didn't want them to see me like that. So I went straight into my friend's house, and she had prepared a bedroom for us, and I went in there and lay down on the bed. And I suddenly remembered that I had left my purse behind. And this was a couple of 100 miles down the road. So I told my friend that I was staying with, and she said, "Oh my goodness, we better call the police." And I said, "Be not disturbed. It is I. You're not going to be disturbed. The God who's taking care of me and all of us is taking care of that person." So she called the police. We thought that was the right thing to do. And the police said, what on earth was she doing with that amount of money in her bag? He said she has no chance of getting that back on the bank holiday and leaving it on the grass. But he got the police in that area, which is called Birmingham, to go and see if they could find the purse. And they asked around everywhere and no one had found it. And my friend, she said, well, I'll lend you some money if you need it. And I said, no, I know it's all right. It is I, be not afraid. And I'm not going to be afraid or let it disturb me. And I went out that evening and I gave my lecture. And when I came home, I went to bed. And the next morning, I had a call from the police. And they said, you're never going to believe this. We found your purse. It has been handed in to a police station. The money's intact. Your cards are there. Nothing has been touched. They gave me the telephone number of the man who had found my purse. And I called him, and as I spoke to him, I could hear all these little children in the background. And he told me he found the purse on the grass, but something told him not to hand it in at that place. So he took it in his car and he said I was going to take it to my local police station and hand it in. But that was away in Cornwall, which was very far away from where I was. And he said that when he was passing a town called Oxford, it was 10:30 at night, and he thought if the police stopped him for any reason and they found that purse, they might think that he had stolen it. So he decided to hand it in at the next police station, which was a city called Oxford. And that's where it was. He said, you can go there and pick it up. And I said, well, do you know that Oxford is the place I'm lecturing tomorrow? Wasn't that wonderful? And I said that I would send him a reward. And I said, it was so honest of you because I hear all those little children, and I'm sure you could have used that money. And he said, I know I could, and I was very tempted, but I knew it wouldn't do me any good. Wasn't that another lovely proof of God's tender love, his loving care? I've had so many of them that we just wouldn't have long enough to tell you all about them. Love. Thank you.